dead. Dead. Hello, hello, and welcome back to yet another episode of Craft Beer is Dead. I am one of your hosts, Bree the Pint-Sized Traveler, accompanied by...
I am a poopy face. No, Chris face.
Pint-Sized right poopy face. Time.
Damn it! The last time I tried to make fun of you.
Well, actually, funny enough, Allie changed her Twitter handle to... the pint-sized poopy butthole, so that's great.
And
poopy
butthole?
And she's messaging restaurants, trolling them on behalf of me. Like, Hardee's, my favorite restaurant, she's messaging them on Twitter, trolling
Wait,
them.
Say that last part again?
No, shut up. Fuck you, Tyler.
No, welcome back. Thank you so much for tuning in. And if it is your first time, we apologize in advance. But you should learn a couple things. We'll do a recap at the end. We'll all be on the same page. But first, before we start getting into any of that, we're going to drink some burst.
Yeah, and we got a banger ahead of us today.
All right, so do you want to tell us what we got while I go through the rundown of the brewery and stuff?
Yeah, we have Rage by Forager, who is gifted by one of our homies.
Yeah, James over at Forager, and he's just a badass that just travels around and kind of like visits a bunch of breweries and does a lot of cool shit.
He literally has the best life.
I don't know how he does it, and I'm super fucking jealous.
He doesn't sleep. He just runs on big stouts and...
and bicep curls.
And bicep curls.
By the way, if we ever make a beer with them, it's, well, it's like stouts and bicep curls.
I love that, actually. Yeah. So this is Mastra Coffee. I might be saying that wrong, but it looks like it's like collaboration with them because they must have used their coffee for it. But
yeah, so it's a mix of different barrel different barrel blends of an imperial stout. I think it said it had hazelnuts in there as well.
Yep. 13%. All I know
is he was super kind enough to gift us this because I know there was a waiting list up there in that area. So if you didn't get it, you should be down in Orlando being cool like us. But also, if you do want to follow somebody cool, follow at Pass the Hops. That's Jeans. And then they have a pretty fun podcast called the Five Mics Podcast as well. So let's glug this down since Doug can't wait any longer.
I can't believe he got the wax off the top.
I feel like after the first time, he's finally got it down. You know what I mean? I'm proud of him, actually.
Because Jordan double dipped it.
What?
You're talking about double dipping Jordan?
Out of context, that sounds really fun.
Well, cheers, you filthy animals.
Cheers! Clink.
Clink. Ooh, look at it. You can see the oils coating the cup.
Oh, yeah. Oh. So while they drink, I'll just tell you that your hair looks great. Okay, there we go.
Wow. If you gave this to me and made me guess the ABV, I would probably wait, say like 8 or 9.
Yo.
It is so fucking smooth. You don't taste, I mean, zero booziness to it, I think.
It's got a little bit of warmth in the barrel,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, yep. And hazel, I get a lot of hazelnut.
You get like a slightly tannic kind of like acidity from like that pH drop. Of the hazelnuts as well, but it's really nice.
Oh my god.
I like that.
That is amazing.
Chocolate covered. It's like if you put raisinettes in a dope ass beer, took them out and then put them in barrels and put coffee, mostra coffee.
Mostra.
And hazelnuts.
I know in Orlando, we can definitely get some of their beer at local bottle shops, so definitely keep on the lookout for them. Did Jerry say the Coors?
So, core-wise, I see a lot of, like, canned sours down this way.
Yeah, they have a lot of sours.
Yeah, they have a very distinct look. So, if you're ever looking for them on shelves and stuff like that, it kind of almost looks like a Bob Ross painting to me.
Yeah, actually, that is perfectly...
I'm just saying.
Perfectly put.
I'm cultured. It's fine.
That could not be more accurate. So, yes, follow that.
Humble Forager. That's their distribution.
Oh, yeah, Humble
right,
Forager.
Sorry.
Yeah, you're right. You're not wrong.
No, but actually, looking up their list at the brewery right now... they have a really nice array of different things. They got a couple IPAs, the little thimble. They've got a stout, saison, a bock, guest beers, all that kind of stuff too. So anything you're into, they got Pilsner Raquel on draft.
So that's their distributor is Humble for. Is that what you just said?
So that's their other company, pretty much like
okay. Their other company. If you can't hear Doug right now,
gotcha, gotcha.
So it helps with distribution, but it's basically. The same, but not so.
Look, if you find something with Forager on it, just support it. Because odds are, if they have anything to do with it, it's fucking dope.
Absolutely. If it's anything like this damn stout, my lord.
All right. Well, based off of how easily this goes down and how much I'll be talking today, I apologize in advance for all my slurring at the end there.
I was really nervous where you were going with that, so that was a good point.
I'm not talking about double dipping, if that's the case. Hey, Jordan, get at me. No, so today is a spooky scary, yes?
Yeah.
Yeah, so last time, 2 weeks ago, we did the Hills Have Eyes origin story.
Yes.
The old Bean Clan.
Yes. Those
little fucking flickers over there.
Bunch of mother flicker. Ew. 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 Ew.
Ew. All right, let's delete this and start over. I hate it.
No way.
Murder boner. Drink.
Yep. That's just you, Chris. No, so today I'm going to be a little self-serving. So we're releasing a beer soon, and mm-hmm. I've been fucking geeking out about this brand for a long time.
No, it's been great. Ever since its conception, you could tell you guys are really excited about it. So
yeah, I mean, like we, you know, if you're not familiar with our brand, we try to play around with a lot of fun stuff. You know, we obviously incorporate some military aspect because we do have that background. And then every now and then we like to really lean into the dark side of things. And this is definitely one
not
of those.
Not Star Wars, but other.
No.
Darker, like, much, much darker.
You know, macabre, gross, kind of things. Macabre. Probably if you're, yeah, if you listen to the scaries, you're probably into it already. But, so, we've got one coming up called Swift Runner. Now, do you know the tale behind Swift Runner, what it denotes, anything like that?
Honestly, I totally forget, so.
All right, cool. So, we're releasing this beer this Friday. This is on a Monday, so on Friday we'll release this one. But the entire synthesis behind this is based around a creature called the Wendigo. Right? Mm-hmm. For those of you who are listening, or for Bree, who's probably too kind to say she doesn't know, only because I keep talking about it all fucking time. So the Wendigo is kind of one of those paranormal, like, almost cryptozoological creatures that it's in this weird realm where it's not necessarily like a pre-agreed upon cryptozoology kind of thing. Yep. So you got like a chupacabra.
Yep.
You've got a fucking Loch Ness monster. You've got a Bigfoot that, like, still to this day... Some people are like, nope, we definitely saw one. We're actually going to
go look
for it.
Did you see the state? Literally, there's a county that just posted about 2 days ago that they were offering like a huge reward because some photo that really convinced like the mayor and the cops and all this stuff. And they are actually like full blown turning this into like a reward. Like they're serious. So anyway,
I want to say in Texas, in Texas, they just issued Bigfoot hunting permits legitimately.
Shut up. The fuck up. That's a great way to make money.
That's exactly what I was saying.
Genius.
Take the dum-dums and throw them out there with guns.
That's... There, I got the permits. I mean, wow, that's hilarious.
You get them on the permits. You get them on... Yeah, it's
holy
great.
Holy shit. And, wow.
Yeah. No, but the Wendigo is this weird thing, too, to where, like, it was embedded in a lot of, like, Native American and Northern American, like, folklore for hundreds, if not thousands of years. And the moment that, like... cultural anthropologists started to move in and try to study this was right around the time it started dying off, essentially, because this was also a time where, like, people became a little bit more sedentary. People didn't have to worry about the necessities of food or freezing or things like that so much as they had to for the past couple hundred years in, like, the early 1900s, right? So they're getting to a point where they can stock up on goods. There's modern tools where they can actually get things going and actually, like, prepare for winters as opposed to just roughing it the fuck out. So because of that, a lot of the stories and the myth and the culture kind of falls out right as we start learning about what this is, right? So with the Wendigo, it's almost just like a lot of other precautionary tales that you tend to find in a lot of folklore.
Yeah.
Which again is kind of cool how this becomes like almost this cryptozoological creature.
Because there's a lot of people who genuinely believe like Bigfoot that this exists.
Oh, there's
like this is very, very serious.
I have to say, like I love the Wendigo for the idea of like a precautionary tale, for the idea that there not so long ago was a time where human beings legitimately were concerned about a creature out in the woods ramaging through like different cultures and stuff like that.
And the same description too, right?
Yeah.
Like they all kind of said this is what it looks like, which
exactly.
is even crazier to think because that's that long ago where it's not like you could post it or call someone. Like if they all have that story, it's kind of even better.
And it's also this kind of thing. It's we find too that it eventually becomes like a catch-all for like mental illness and those kind of things too. But what's insane to me now is as I was looking up all these different stories, right? All these different kind of backgrounds and histories and all these random sides of it, there are still people, like if you, there's a Reddit for Wendigo, and there's, you know, a lot of stories like, wow, oh, I ran into one, or blah, 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 and that's fine too. But there are legit people posting like, how do I fucking kill one if I run into one? How do I kill it? Or I think I'm going to turn into
like
one.
Like taking preventative measures, like, dude, just in case.
Yeah, it's interesting as hell. Which is kind of what, like, why I'm thinking it's like super cool, because we know about, like, you know, Greek gods, and unless you're really trying to become super hipster, no one's believing in Greek gods anymore.
Yeah.
But this is still one of those things where even up to a recent murder in the early 2000s, people were still going,
oh my God,
probably a Wendigo.
Wow.
It's crazy. So what a Wendigo is, we haven't necessarily talked on that.
Yeah.
Is it's basically a transformative thing that can happen to any human. Mm-hmm. And it typically happens, the predefining thing is once you've consumed human flesh, you therefore can become a Wendigo. And mm-hmm. it basically... it can try to draw you into the woods. It can do all these different things. But the at the end of the day, it's a precautionary tale of, hey, like, don't eat people. Yeah. Like, don't be a bean clan and, like, eat a bunch of just randos.
Like, you have options.
And a big thing was, too, is you find it kind of really geographically located in specific North American tribes that had really, really harsh winters. That, you know, they didn't have a lot of food source around them. And they also had to fight biting cold. So... Wendigos typically, through the legend, are anywhere from 6 to 8 feet tall, extremely gaunt down to like skin bone. Big thing being like you could literally see almost every bone in their face. Oftentimes bald, completely white, almost frostbitten looking.
Oh, they don't have hair?
No, dark hollow eyes. A lot of times the things that really like, kind of really fucks with me, and you can kind of almost picture it mentally pretty well, is the... they often talk about lack of soft tissue around the mouth, like they've almost eaten their own, like, their own gums off. And the biggest thing about them is that they just have this insatiable hunger. No matter how many times they eat, and they only try to prey on humans, how many times they eat, the second they finish, they need another. And like that's the perpetual agony of becoming one, essentially, is you will never be satiated, and you will always be emaciated.
Is that, like, where gluttony started?
Essentially, yeah.
You know what I mean?
I'm pretty sure Wendigo is like in the box in 7. So, terrible joke. Thanks, guys. No, but what's insane too is for what little we know about it, you know, it's obviously sparked a lot of fun creepypastas, which we'll totally read one in a little bit, and it gets fucking gnarly.
Because you know Chris loves those, so.
They're just so bad. I love them.
I still think my favorite Christmas story came from the creepypasta.
Oh, they're great.
The Christmas tree one.
Oh, I got
my
one.
Favorite.
As I was going through these earlier this morning, I found another one for Christmas next year. I've already saved it. It's fucking
great.
That
was a great one.
Oh. So, what's interesting too, you know, we have this mythological creature embedded in the culture of a lot of North American tribes, the Algonquin, the Cree. Then when it comes down to it is you start to see this kind of cultural change of kind of fading out of a lot of the old ways and kind of adapting a lot of the more, like, not to say Western, but like as, you know, a lot of, you know, people encroaching into different tribes' territories.
Yeah.
I mean, as that starts happening, the two cultures are eventually start clashing. And unfortunately, we all know who wins on that end of it.
Yeah.
And as that starts to spread throughout certain areas, we start to see this whole justice system that used to be based on myth, folklore, these kind of things, start to fade away. Mm-hmm. And it's this really interesting time frame where, you know, 100 years ago, you could blame something on Wendigo.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, they're being tried for murder. Like, those kind of things. So, as we go through that, we'll start with the story of Swift Runner, who was basically accused of being a Wendigo at a certain point, too.
Oh, yeah. That's the Native American, right? Like, the Swift Runner was a Native American?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. We'll talk about it right now. So, this is from Jana G. Pruden, the Edmonton Journal. Back in 2011, she wrote, "It was a pitch black and brutally cold when Swift Runner was led from his cell at Fort Saskatchewan jail to start his long last walk toward the gallows that awaited outside the swirling snow. Swift Runner, or Kuki Tsi Kuchin? That's difficult for me, but I felt pretty good about it. Oh, look, there he is. No, I'm just kidding. He'd been told to prepare for death and seemed to have heeded the advice. He walked confidently into the yard, seeming much calmer than many of those who were there to watch him die. Most of the 60 people gathered around near the gallows had never seen a hanging, as they were nervous and anxious about what was going to happen. Sheriff Edward Richard had been delayed by the snow and the weather and was flustered by his late arrival at the fort. The hangman, too, appeared nervous. The execution had been ordered to take place at 7:30 on December 20th, 1879. With less than half an hour left to go, it was discovered that the crowd had taken the trap from the gallows and burned it as kindling, but the hangman had forgotten to bring straps to bind the prisoner's arms. As the sheriff and hangman rushed to get the scaffolding ready again, Swiftrunner sat near one of those fires that had been lighted nearby, joking and chatting, snacking on pemmican. Pemmican? It's a heart attack. I don't know. Whatever you want to imagine. The thick noose still hanging loose around his neck. I could kill myself with a tomahawk, he offered, and save the hangman further trouble. So needless to say, it's not going well. Swiftrunner was well known around Fort Saskatchewan settlement, striking 6'3" with a strapping build and one policeman called an ugly and evil-looking face as I have ever seen.
Oh my god.
He was once known as a smart and trustworthy, a reputation that won him a job as a guide for the North Mounted Police. But in one newspaper story, his contact with white men, however, ruined him. That ruination came in part from an inordinate fondness for the whiskey that was smuggled into the area disguised as medicine. Swiftrunner was known to be an ugly customer to meet when on the spree. So ugly that some called him the terror of the whole region.
Isn't that so ironic that that's what we call you too?
Yeah. It's me and my whiskey shenanigans. Oh, gotta go on a spree. The police sent Swiftrunner back to his tribe, where he caused so much trouble he turned Cree camps into little hells, quote. And he was eventually turned out from his community altogether, retreating into the wilderness with his wife, mother, brother, and 6 children.
I was going to say, it has to be really hard to get excommunicated from a tribe and then not many people left with him. Like, that's... seems like they're all fucking nuts.
At this point, they moved to a cave in Scotland, changed their name to Bean, and ate a bunch of... No, I'm just kidding. No. So, he moves out of the community. The police started to hear stories in the spring. A Cree chief said Swiftrunner had turned cannibal, quote, and a hunter reported that Swiftrunner's entire family had been killed in the woods, but a squad of officers who went out to investigate couldn't find Swiftrunner or his family. Instead, Swiftrunner went to the police himself in the spring, telling him that his wife had committed suicide and that the rest of the family had died of starvation.
Oh, fuck off.
Yeah, well, I mean, doesn't seem like the greatest guy, so...
Yeah.
But the officers noticed that Swiftrunner didn't look underfed.
Yeah.
Yeah. The prisoner arrived at our camp in the spring and did not look very poor or thin.
Oh my god.
Or as if he had been starving, one noted. Suspicious of the story, police traveled with Swiftrunner to his family's camp in the wilderness north of Fort Saskatchewan. After days of searching, they found the remnants of a campfire with piles of bones and human skulls scattered nearby. Some of the skulls were dry and hollow, empty even of marrow. Or the bones, I'm sorry. But still, creepy. A small moccasin had been stuffed inside the skull of Swiftrunner's mother, and a beading needle still stuck out of the unfinished work.
Oh my god.
So he's just like using it as a placeholder, fucking psycho.
Wow.
Swiftrunner was tried for murder and cannibalism by a jury that included English-speaking Cree half-breeds, quote.
Surprised that they even had a trial.
Yeah, exactly. So basically it's a mix of like Cree-English mix and then a couple of people that actually know the Cree language, just to make sure that it was actually fair. You know what I mean? Swiftrunner sat calmly through the testimony of witnesses who described the family being in perfect health when they headed out into the woods, then Swiftrunner coming out of the forest alone. Which, that's a movie scene if I've ever seen one.
Oh, this needs to be. Oh, I can already tell.
He said, I could not expect to see any of his family because he was the only one left. Yeah. There was no evidence presented in Swiftrunner's defense. Asked if he wanted to say anything, he responded, I did it. The death sentence was to be the first legal hanging in the Canadian Northwest Territories, an area that includes what is now the province of Alberta.
Oh my god. Yep. Can you fathom that Canada hung anybody ever?
Yeah, and they did this back in 1867?
That's not that long. That's crazy.
I know, and that's the thing. That's a big thing I was thinking about, too, is like you hear these dates when you're like reading in high school and stuff, and you're like, oh man, that seems like forever. And then, like, the more you think about it, it's like, my great-great-grandfather was probably alive.
There was a woman who just died who was born in 1899. Think of it like that. She was like 120 and like actually lived. Like that was a real thing.
That's insane.
So that's crazy.
So Swiftrunner declined to spend the night before his execution with a priest. Quote, the white man has ruined me, and I don't think their god could amount for much. Yikes.
Sorry. That was so funny.
So there you go. So, yeah, a scaffold was built especially for the execution, and an army pensioner was paid $50 to serve as hangman, which I don't know how much $50 was back then. That sounds like
that's probably a lot.
Pretty good rate.
But also,
got a blue lever, you know?
Yeah.
Some said Switrunner had developed a taste for cannibalism years earlier when he was forced to eat the remains of a starving hunting partner to save himself. Others said that he had been possessed by the Wendigo, a flesh-eating spirit that tormented him and gave him nightmares.
So he's a really shitty hunter.
It's possible. And then one thing I was thinking, too, with these stories is, you know, like, I don't know if there's any sort of trauma involved in having to resort to cannibalism.
Yeah, that's true.
So, like, I don't know if maybe... So, let's say... And I'm just trying to roll through how somebody would get to the point absolutely. Where they would do this, right? So, let's say it's fucking negative 30 degrees outside. All your food's gone. You haven't eaten in 4 days. You're basically drinking snow water. And somebody's already passed away. And it's the worst day of your life. Mm-hmm. But also, you're kind of hungry. You make the choice. Yikes. But that's what some people have to do, yeah. right? So...
And that theory is that person's already passed away.
Yeah, exactly. This guy said he basically murdered the whole family.
Exactly. And but the kids. How many kids went in?
Six.
Fuck a duck.
So this is just one story we know of, though. Yeah. Right? But then you also think, too, like, another day, 3, 10, whatever years later comes down the road, it's negative 30 degrees, there is no food, mm-hmm. and you know there's only one way out of this. And I wonder if, like, your weird, like... self-preservation brain kicks in and basically just tries to go, all right, well, there's only one way and I'm going to take care of it. Like, yeah. that kind of thing.
Like, you know? You've already justified it enough in your head that why not?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to justify the action, but at the same time, I wonder...
He's able to justify
well,
it,
well, and, like,
obviously.
So Wendigo psychosis specifically is something we'll talk about in a yeah. little bit. But that is... It was a medical epidemic or disorder, right? That people kind of recognized loosely. It wasn't part of, like, the DSM or whatever the hell it was, but... Excuse me. It wasn't part of that, but at the same time, it was something where, like, local communities considered Wendigo psychosis a term for somebody who committed cannibalism while there was still food rations in the area.
So where did that term go, then? Where did we get... sorry if you covered this, but, like, then where do we get in history where... So it's not Wendigo psychosis, like, then what the fuck do you call it?
Murder and cannibalism.
And that's it? Like, that's they it. Just were like, oh, shit.
We'll get
shit.
To that, too.
Okay.
So,
okay.
So with this guy, let's see here. I mean, it basically just describes how the hanging went. I will say, for the rest of the story, it does go on a little bit longer. It seems as though the people at Fort Saskatchewan went out of their way to reach out to the tribes and go, hey, we understand this isn't something you typically do. We have to do this. We're going to do this, and if there's anything that you guys want to weigh in, a lot of the tribes are just like, hey, if you can do it as efficiently as possible, then, you know, we're not going to stand in your way kind of thing.
That's a really interesting, scenario that there's this tribe, and then mm-hmm. there's actually, like, a pre-functioning government that are kind of having to...
Yeah, and they both have their
like,
own morals.
You? Yeah. Or is it me? Like,
well, and so really the tribe had already ostracized them. But also at the same time, like, you know, killing a member of their yeah. tribe so that yeah. it's this almost diplomatic relationship kind of thing. Like, yeah. hey, are you guys going to fuck with us if we yeah. hang this dude?
Yeah, that's
and they,
interesting.
Yeah, so even the tribes basically flat out stated, we understand, like, we don't agree with it, but yeah. if you're going to do it as quickly as possible. One witness who had watched several other executions in the United States also seemed pleased with the spectacle, slapping his thigh and saying, boys, that's the prettiest hanging I ever seen.
So this motherfucker tours around like it's Warped Tour, but he's just going around to like yeah. hangings around the... How do you say like, oh, I've been to quite a few, like chalk this one up.
He's probably got like a shirt on the back that says like December 26th, 1867, Swift Runner, and then has like the fucking, oh, wait until the fucking 68 comes out. Whoa! Yeah.
I see it. And I now see that as the shirt.
That is, oh man. I'm going to think of that every time that I wear the Squid Runner shirt that we're about
I'm
to launch
so
too,
excited.
Man.
I'm so excited.
Oh.
And we'll include not the graphic for, like, the beer that they're making, but a graphic, obviously, of what, like, quote-unquote, in Wendigo would look like.
So
don't worry.
Dude, the Wendigo is, like, one of those, like, you know, you see, like, Bigfoot, and you're like, oh, a big ape. I wonder if he's friendly. Or, like, Loch Ness Monster, you're like, oh, I'm not in the water. This is great. I don't have to worry about this. Or a chupacabra, and you're like, ah, small, kick it. I could probably beat that thing.
This demonic ass looking thing is
Wendigo
just...
is like one of those things where, like, if you see it in the woods, you're like, well, this is how I die, and I just shit my pants.
Well, just judging by the height that you said, you know,
yeah.
that alone is pretty. Well, I guess Bigfoot is supposed to be that tall too, but
yeah, but Bigfoot like could be
he doesn't
friendly.
Eat people. Yeah, they were like, oh, by the way, you get like Bigfoot by eating people.
Yeah,
no, you just get like Bigfoot for having big feet.
So we, I'll try to go over the, like, the loose details. In like 1907. So that was 1867, right?
Okay.
Yeah. So we have 40 years later. We have this Wendigo psychosis. We have this time period where, you know, Wendigo is still an appropriate response towards certain crimes and things like that in specific areas of North America. Until we have, I forget what his last name is. I thought I had the states too,
or predominantly Canada?
What's that?
Was it the states too, or mostly Canada?
It was the states as well, actually, up in Minnesota, which is Forager is. So this is very convenient.
That's funny.
They actually have a bunch of Wendigos that work on their staff. I don't know if you know that. So the last known thing as far as legit documentation goes of Wendigos creeping up in some sort of weird scenario in 1907, I forget the man's last name, but his first name was Jack, and he was he had been a shaman for, I think it was the Algonquin tribe, and he had been in that profession for 14 years and had proclaimed that he had basically medicated 12 or so, if not more, Wendigos before turning. So basically that means that he had probably killed 12 people that had eaten people as like a survival resort.
What a weird flex.
So he was a shaman. He basically prides himself on the fact that, like, I can hunt down Wendigos and I take care of them. So in his culture, he's seen as this hero, right?
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, if that's true, then he is a hero.
Yeah.
He's basically taking care of this monster that lives in the woods and all this kind of stuff. If it's not, he's a guy who, through their religious and philosophical practices, basically murdered over 12 people because they had eaten.
I mean, it's like witchcraft, where they would just kill people
exactly.
for speculation.
I'm not saying it's wrong. No, I'm not saying it's wrong. It's the understanding of those people at that time. It's the same thing that people will probably look back on us in 1,000 years ago. How the fuck did they think that?
But 1,000 years, that wasn't that long ago. Like, you just said 1900.
Proportionately speaking, we can have that argument.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah.
So, so in 1907, he gets arrested as well as his brother for basically alleviating a Wendigo, and they were like, "No, you murdered that lady." And he's like, "No, you don't understand. Like, she had Wendigo psychosis.
Oh my god!
And she was about to turn. And I'm a shaman, and that's just what I do." And they were like, "No, you murdered that woman, and you're gonna be set to hang.
Wow!
And so is your brother." So.
Did they say how they did it?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
I wasn't able to find that.
Yeah. Wow.
But so yeah, so I think it was about 3 days before Jack actually escaped and ended up hanging himself. So
on purpose?
It'd be a really bad way if he tripped or something, was like running through the woods. But unfortunately, his brother was about to be acquitted. I don't know how much he had in realm of the actual thing itself. But he was about to be acquitted, but died 3 days beforehand because of consumption, which is now known as tuberculosis, because no one had any sort of defense against that. So there you go.
It was called consumption?
Yeah, it used to be called consumption because they thought it basically consumed you from the inside out.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Oh,
fun fact.
That's a really weird thing to know, but I actually really appreciate that.
Put that on a shirt.
I'm impressed with that weird fucking fact.
Hey, man, I'm full of them. It's literally my only thing I have to offer. So do you want to hear a creepypasta real quick?
Absolutely.
Now, guys, if you don't know what these are bad. For the sake of being bad.
But they could be really good.
That's why they're so good.
Check back to our Christmas episode if you want need more references why you need to look this site up.
Let's hope they're real. We probably know they're not, obviously. I mean, I kind of...
You want the Santa story to be real?
Which one?
Remember the GoPro and the ornament? And then you made the joke at the end. You're like, wouldn't it be really funny if it was just Will Ferrell in the corner the whole time? I fucking died. I still think that's one of the funniest things you've ever said.
It's probably like where I peaked, actually.
It was hilarious.
Bonus episode, Christmas. That's where I peaked, guys. Who knows? Maybe we got something in here. Let's check it out. You ready?
Yes.
I'm hungry. I don't usually wake up hungry. Usually a post-sleep panic grips my stomach and doesn't let go for 2 or 3 hours. 5 if I was drinking the night before. Even if it was a little bit, I won't tolerate breakfast. Today was different. I got out of bed and searched the fridge for some eggs. I know I had them, but maybe Frankie made off with a few. After salvaging some from the bottom drawer I cooked them, I didn't have have work anyway, so I had time. Last night, Frankie and I went out to dinner for our 6-month anniversary. I was taking her out to the new Thai restaurant that we love, but she suggested a new one. it's not really Thai, Burmese. It might be Burmese, I think, she said over the phone. It just opened up on Milton Avenue near the Chase. That's not a really busy area, though, is it? Well, no, it'll be quiet and romantic. I could picture her half smile as she said it. All right, sure, I'll come by at, I looked at the clock. 7? 7:30. I gotta get the gum out of Moxie's fur before I shower. They have a dog named Moxie. There's that. I hope that doesn't pertain later. Foreboding. These are all in here. I didn't write this yet. The restaurant was hidden nearly, between a nail salon with bright pink awnings and a closed Jewish deli. The building was thin, four-story block with a single light on in it. I looked at Frankie and said, "This?" "Down here," she said, somewhat exasperated. She led me down a set of narrow, steep stairs to the left of the building, over which the words "faux chop" were written. "How'd you know that?" I asked. "Megan's the one who told me about this. She came here last night with Rod." The restaurant itself was warm, comfortable, soft lights hung on the walls. The floor was cushioned with maroon carpet. Fish tanks stood here and there between a series of two-person tables. The waiter hurried us out from the kitchen. "Ah, welcome, sir and madame. Welcome to faux chop. Please sit." He ushered us to the nearest table. "To drink? You both must be thirsty. You must be hungry. Please." He pushed menus into our hands. "Water's fine for me," I said, looking at Frankie. "Two waters." I scanned the menu as the waiter bustled off. "That guy's a real go-getter," I smiled. "Shut up," she said. "Seriously, don't embarrass me everywhere." The waiter rushed back with two glasses. "To eat, sir, madame?" I scanned the menu. "I don't really... What do you suggest?" "Ah, sir, well, you must try the mian gol. Burmese national dish, sir. Tender rice and fish soup, onions, garlic, lemongrass, served with minced pork, sir." He smiled, his tongue flicked up against his upper lip.
Ew.
"Yeah, sure, yeah, I'll have that," he said. "Giant thok," Frankie said without missing a beat. He whipped the menus from our hand. "Excellent," he said loudly and hurried back to the kitchen. "A connoisseur, you." I eyed her and sipped it from the glass. "It's salad with ginger and beans. I had it once, I loved it. It wasn't Thai, but it wasn't bad. The pork definitely had a weird bitterness to it, but with enough soy sauce, it was unnoticeable." "Not bad, huh?" Frankie said as we motioned to the stairs. "Exactly. That was not bad. There's bad, and that was not bad." Kind of like the writing of this one.
Yeah, honestly, I was thinking that the whole time.
Right? "Come on, it was at least all right. We should have gone to Sri Thai. It was fine. Shut up." I only had 4 eggs left this morning. 4 was all I could find. While I was cooking them, my stomach's growls turned into pangs. It hurt. I ate all 4 in under 3 minutes. I shredded cheddar cheese over them. I threw in peppers and onions and olives. I inhaled all of it, threw the napkin down, but I was still hungry. But it didn't make any sense. I should be at the point of throwing up after all that. I looked down at my plate, all the tiny flecks of eggs in the corner of the table. Maybe if I scraped those up too, but those weren't enough. I headed to the couch to let myself digest. Maybe it would hit my stomach. Just give it some time. Still hungry. And then I'll feel fool to put me back to bed. I waited, waited, and waited. My stomach growled again. 3 hours later, the fridge was empty. Greasy Tupperware lay on the floor, tinfoil with burn marks clinging to the rack of the stove. I ate every slice of cheese, meatballs, Dutch chocolate ice cream, whole tomatoes, leftover steak, frozen burgers. I pulled down a tin of lasagna so hard it flipped and splattered onto the floor. I scooped it up with my hands, shoveled it in my mouth like a fucking animal. But I was still hungry. I stumbled into the bathroom, weak from hunger, gripping the sink, and I looked in the mirror. Somebody had taken my face and was wearing it as a mask. My cheeks, like, hung off the bone. My bags under my eyes had gone from light purple to pitch black. My pupils were pinpricks, the eyes bloodshot. I was bleach white except for the red and brown streaks surrounding my mouth from the pasta and steak sauce. And my hair is thinning. Before I had time to take it in, I got distracted. My lips were red, like very wonderfully red. I licked them, my stomach groaned, and I was drooling. Beer break! Ruin the moment. There we go. I was drooling. Hello? It was Frankie. Before I could swing the bathroom shut, she was there. You know you left the door open, so if I wanted to hack you up into pieces, I could probably... She had come around the corner. She dropped a plastic supermarket bag and brought up her hands up to her mouth. My God, what happened? I don't know. I'm so starving. She looked back over the kitchen and the overturned containers and flecks of food on the counter and the floor and the drawers ripped out of the fridge. You ate all that? Yeah, well, I don't know. Maybe it's food poisoning? It's the opposite of food poisoning. You might have to go see a doctor. But I had remembered something. I remembered the dinner from last night. The food, something wasn't quite right about it. It was the pork. At the thought of the pork, I started salivating. Spit filled my mouth and ran down my chin onto my shirt. what the fuck? I'm not even joking. I'm calling 911. What's Megan's address? What? Megan, I roared, tearing my finger into my stomach. She went there. To Faux Chop. I need her address. I'm dying. I didn't even realize how close I had gotten to her. She backed up against the counter. Her fingers gripped the edge. I could see the green irises in her wide eyes. Could see her cheeks. Her delicious cheeks. She closed her eyes, trying to remember. I stepped forward, looking at those cheeks, puffing in, or in and out, and heaving breath. If I could just take 166 Woodhaven Road, she spluttered, opening her eyes. She screamed when she saw my proximity, pushed me hard in the chest, and sprinted out of the apartment. I sprinted 4 miles to Megan's apartment. I burst into the lobby, scanning and for the listing of Conley, ran up the stairs, 4 at a time, to the 3rd floor. Megan! I bellowed, pounding the door. Megan! Open up! It had swung open on the first knock. A wave of warm air hit me, carried a sickly sweet odor of stagnant rotting and roadkill that left from the garbage bag. I gagged. Megan? No answer. I stepped into the apartment. All the lights were on. Megan! I walked down the hall, past the kitchen, covering my mouth. Her fridge hung open, empty. Its contents were scattered along every surface. Butter and packets of turkey bacon and yogurts apparently flung against the walls, pans on the stove full of chicken and rice sitting in a layer of cold oil. The floor was covered in milk and onions and dressing and broken eggs and blood from roast beef. That was a lot of blood and way too dark for beef. Megan, I know you're here. Let's go. Come out and tell me what the fuck's happened. But I had turned the corner into the living room. When I registered what I saw, I half screamed and fell backwards. If I hadn't felt the stench, I surely would have knocked me down. This is where it's going to get a little gnarly, boys.
She's eating someone.
I read this one earlier.
Yeah.
It's a gold star. I can't say that. That's somebody else's thing. A little banana sticker if you get through this one. Yay! Megan was kneeling in the middle on a carpet saturated with blood. Flies numbering in the hundreds covered the floor, the walls, the TV screen. Everywhere there was blood. The lamp near the window sizzled with dry blood stuck to it. Rod was on the couch to my right. He was face down, his head, torn nearly off, hung off the side of the couch by a flap of skin. His back was opened up like someone had put a shovel in and popped it out in both directions. I could see right into the cavity. It was empty except for a piece of his lung. His intestines were clumped on the floor, one long strand running back inside of him like an umbilical cord. His calves were carved right down to the bone. Maggots poked their heads out of the shredded meat of the thighs. The head stared. The upside-down, eyeless, lipless thing grinned over at me, still on the floor.
Megan, what did you do?
It's got a lot of dashes, so I figure that's how it was read, right? Okay. She wasn't listening. She was ripping at a thick chunk of meat in her hands, eating with heavy, guttural sounds.
Megan!
Are you going to share?
Answer me, please!
I touched her shoulder. A claw hand flew up. Hooked fingers hit the side of my face.
Ow! Megan, what the...
It's us, she shrieked, whipping around onto all fours. Her face was gaunt, hollow, white. It's us. She was grinning, slivers of rod hanging from between her teeth. She wheezed a laugh, her tiny pupils fixated on mine. Nothing to eat but people. Nothing else will do! She laughed again wildly, blood or mucus or whatever rattling in her throat. I couldn't answer. I was backing away on all fours, scrambling to get away. My eyes looked right into hers. There was a dead animal look in them. My gaze trailed downward. Her cheeks were gone, but still, enough meat on there. Be pretty good. I stopped thinking. I only hunched, watched myself stand up over her, watched myself dive at her hunched body, watched myself pin her to the ground. I felt my open mouth and teeth sink into the side of her face, closing teeth grinding and her hot blood squirting down my throat. Ugh. She cried out, grabbing at my hands, my arms. I couldn't have noticed. A tender, warm comfort flowed from my mouth outward as I swallowed. My stomach churned in its appreciation. I took another bite. This time I found its way down to her throat. Out of the corner of my eye, I could see the molars from the hole I'd left. As I pulled back, I felt tendons pop, muscles tear. Hot, sticky blood soaked my face. My eyes showered down over me and I swallowed whole, laughing, giggling with the feeling of real food, savory, healing meat. I heard Megan gurgle at the hole in her throat. Pretty gross, eh?
Sounds like that bubbling
oh, yeah.
Bucket right.
We have sound effects. I looked up, closed my eyes, breathed in deep, letting the fetid stink of the room flood into my lungs, felt the stomach start working greedily, and tranquility flooded over me. I fell back next to Megan, who was fingering the hole in her throat feebly, her mouth hanging open, her heartbeat slowed, and I felt a slow glow behind my closed eyelids. I lay there for what could have been years. I felt like my life had been leading up to this one glorious moment, this one feeling of release, like a cyst had been suddenly drained. I felt like I could die right now and right here and be happy. But the glow got dimmer. The lights started to fade.
I got hungry again.
The happiness was leaving. My breath was getting shorter. I sat up. The room bathed in blood. Blah, blah, blah. Two corpses lying on the floor. Blah, blah, blah. Bree ruined everything. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I felt something feverish. And literally last sentence, I'm hungry.
Is it really the last sentence?
Yes!
I'm hungry? I'll give you a break. I was just trying to foreshadow.
Two things. One, in your defense, you're not fucking wrong. That was written that way. I mean, of course. Yeah, we all saw that coming. As soon as we heard pork, we were like, that's not pork.
That's not pork.
That's not pork. That's a good shirt, though. That's not pork. Holy shit. We need to get that one made.
That is a good one.
Ooh-wee.
That is a good one. Oh, my God.
So, yeah, that's, I felt like that was pretty fun. Couple real things.
That was a fantastically written. I think that a great story, and I could see that being an actual movie, especially on like the whole subject in itself. But that writing was phenomenal.
That's
very detailed.
Yeah.
Very detailed.
Except for me fucking it up by stopping every 10 seconds.
Sorry, I mean, guys. You got to burp. You got to drink. What do we need? What else? I get it.
Yeah. So remember when I was telling you to remind me about Carnival Barkers? Carnival Barkers, you say? So the last thing, very, very quick, right? But this is one of those ones where this took place in Portage La Prairie in Canada. And it was in July 30th, 2008. A gentleman named, oh my God, what's his name? Vince Lee, was on a bus, Greyhound bus. And he sat next to Tim McLean.
Okay.
Tim McLean, super nice guy from the sounds of it. I actually saw photos of him.
Like, this is not a spooky pasta.
No, this is like a real story. Like, literally, the only reason I found this story is because as I was looking up Wendigo stories, someone was like, yo, check the story out. People think it's a Wendigo. And I was like, what the fuck? It's 2008. Anyway, also, this is probably like a good setup for a horror movie because this is how like one actually comes and finds me because I'm talking shit about it.
Right? It's like those people or that thing you thought you saw downtown.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Let's bring that up again. Anyway, so Tim McLean, 22-year-old Canadian man, was a carnival barker. And actually, you know, that sounds like it has a derogatory kind of term to it. But it, like, if you look up photos of the guy, he looked like he was a pretty upstanding dude. He was just trying to figure things out. Like, he's the carnival barker in like a polo shirt, being like, "Come on down, please, like, come."
Oh,
like,
that's what that means.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So he's taking the bus. Not entirely sure why, but this guy, or like, so sitting there, Vince Lee sits next to him. And then Tim just falls asleep. Everyone on the bus basically states, Vince got up in a terrifyingly calm way, stood over the man, and just stabbed the shit out of him. To the point to where the bus driver was like, fuck this, stop the bus, and then everyone ran off. And he just continued to just stab and play with the guy and cut his head off and start eating parts of him. And
just right there, just starts eating
him?
Yeah,
on the side of the fucking road.
When did Basalts come out again?
Maybe around this time. Maybe this is before we knew what they were called. You know
right?
what I mean? No, but he basically just goes and does that as the cops come in. They try to, like...
Imagine that scene! Imagine the cops, and he's still, like, doing it.
That's the thing, is he literally would just, like, walk around with a head in his hand and just show it out the window.
Oh, shut the
take
hell
a piece
up.
Off, and, like, yeah, this guy was fucking insane.
Was this his only victim?
Yep.
Yeah?
So they finally get him off after a struggle. God, that sounded gross. They finally get him off the bus after a struggle. Give you a moment on that one. Try the veal. Tip staff.
Okay.
Anywho.
I'm back.
They get him off the bus. They find pieces. I think it was an ear and his tongue in his pockets. Like, he was just saving him for later.
Wait, is this the guy who pulled the ear out of his pocket? No.
Is that, like, a fucking common thing?
No, I swear to God, I think that this... The only reason why I know about this... Maybe this was a current one. I don't know. Something literally just happened where this guy was on a bus, and then the cops pulled him over, all this crazy shit, and then he just nonchalantly pulls the ear out of his pocket.
Could be I mean, I feel like there's not a lot of that going on,
I know,
so it's probably
right?
the same
That's
dude.
That's why my face lit up the way it did.
Yeah, I mean, could be the same dude. I don't know. Vince Lee. So here's the scary part about that, right? So he was released in 2017. So he's just free.
Oh my God, shut up.
Nope. Canada, they were like, you're good, right? And he's like, yeah, I'm fine.
Shut the hell up.
No,
absolutely not. He is out and about living. How does that happen? Canada, do better.
Didn't face shit.
What the fuck?
Which is probably why they got all these fucking Wendigos sitting around.
Because he just made more of them. Wow.
Yeah.
He is out and about.
Yeah, by the way, guys,
we're gonna
explore this a lot, so it's gonna be a lot of fun when we explore these kind of things together.
I wish I had a live going on right now so you could just see just the puzzle. I just can't. How the fuck can you do something like that? And it's like heinous. And so was that not considered prematurely thought out?
Why? No. Afterwards, they basically stated, "Oh, we firmly believe he poses no threat to society
the
anymore."
The actual fuck. Wait. So did he know the guy? I forget. No. You said that he did not know him. So is a random like? And they did enough investigation. Like, there's no ties to this guy. This was a random person. And then in their brains, they were like, "Oh, he won't do it again."
So far as they know.
Well, that's very unsettling.
Yeah. So
thanks, Chris.
No, what's really, really fun is how many of these people are actually still on the streets after doing terrible things. How cool is that?
Yeah.
Yeah, so if you're not afraid of Wendigos, lock your doors for people. People are the worst.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, that's pretty much... I thought it was a lot of fun because, like, you have all these different stories of, like, Wendigo, right? And it's this terrifying creature that seems so far-fetched and whatever. But, again, like, I think we've touched on it once before. But the Tulpa effect kind of thing that we talked about before of like, it's not real, but is it then also not fake because it is instigating a lot of things that people do justify their actions because of Wendigo psychosis or because Wendigo is a thing in their community, they almost self like fall into it.
Isn't it like Schrodinger's cat kind of thing too? Do you know that analogy where it's like the cat's dead, the cat's alive until you like can act like you, no one knows. Like you have no idea because it's. Not see you can't
it's like
it's
the,
not a yes there's not a no to it.
It's the joke of like Schrodinger's funeral was a closed casket.
I'm fucking done. I'm walking out of this room. Chris can say goodbye.
All right, everybody. Huge thank you to Sticker Wolf for always being dope and helping us out. We'll get no you're good. Look at you go.
Are you kidding me right now? How the fuck did you find that?
Oh, and again, huge thank you to James over at Forager. Again, please follow him at Past the Hops. Again, their podcast is super dope. Five Mics podcast. Yeah, that's all I got. Oh, did you know how many eyeballs were missing from Tim McClain when they found his body on the train?
No, don't tell me. It was Toodles?
Yeah.
Wow. Knew it. And he was hungry.
Yeah.
Dead. Dead.